acceptable response to the productive members of that society. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is to not take that first drop. If you are like us, you know that one is too many and a thousand never enough. We put great emphasis on this, but we know that when we use drugs in any form or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again. Thinking of alcohol as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. Before we came in, many of us viewed alcohol separately, but we cannot afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug. We are people with disease of addiction who must obtain all drugs in order to recover.
Thanks, Gabe. All right, without further ado, I would like to introduce our first speaker. It is an honor and a privilege for me to introduce Sierra E. from the Primary Purpose Group of Narcotics Anonymous.
I'm Sierra and I'm an addict. Oh man. So I actually put effort into myself today to look a little better, and the baby has proceeded to puke on me several times. But that's okay. So I kind of forgot that I had to speak up until I want to say about 10 a.m. and that's when the nerves started, the obsession started. Because despite being around here for a little bit, I'm still super uncomfortable with sharing my story. And actually, there's less people here, so that makes it more nerve-wracking. Because then I can't disassociate and be like, I don't know any of you, at H&I. But it's always an honor to be asked to speak because, like I said, it's this journey that I've been on doesn't mean that I work a perfect program or that every day I wake up saying I'm the best person in the world. The disease consistently tells me that I'm not good enough. My worth is in question. And I have to continuously put work into how I feel about me. And I do that through step work. My clean date is 11/30/2016. And It should have been in June. And sometimes when June is about to roll around, I kind of get a little reminiscent on that. But just to kind of back up a little bit, some of you have heard my story before, but I started using really young. And it wasn't just the using, right? The way I grew up, my parents, they were fighting every single night. They were about to get a divorce. Also during that time, my grandfather passed away, my great-grandfather passed away, and my parents did finally get divorced. Also during that time, I was being abused by my next door neighbor. And for a long time, I held a resentment against my family for not noticing my pain, because how could you not notice that your child is in that much pain? But I realized through step work that my parents were getting a divorce. To contemplate that, to leave a relationship, is a big deal. My mom lost not only her father, but her grandfather, whilst in the middle of a divorce. It wasn't just about me anymore. And thank God for step work to allow the freedom of being able to see outside of my own pain. Also during that time, it was middle school, you know? And I don't know about anybody else, but middle school was way harder for me than high school. And when I moved around so much, I ended up in this tiny little school district with 120 students. And there was no place for me to find my footing because their grandparents knew each other, their great-grandparents knew each other. And it wasn't really it was hard for me to fit in. And so while my addiction in itself was there and it was present, my addiction kind of took the turn of to people, being promiscuous. I was a promiscuous young girl. very promiscuous, but it's because I liked that attention that I got. And I'm not just talking, like, it wasn't just in, like, you know, the opposite sex. It included friendships, right? Like, I would hone in on, like, these different friend groups and change everything about me to fit that group, to feel a part of. Because I just wanted to, like, feel like I belonged. You know, I've been that girl with hair short enough that you could spike it. I've been that bougie bitch. I've been that, like, ghetto girl. I've been that preppy girl. You know, it has given me a vast taste in music, I will say that. I love everything. I really do. If anything came out of it that was good, it was that. but that's kind of how it, like, continued to evolve. Like, my using would uptick and it would change, and I would try to use a different drug or, you know, a different substance or in a different way. But the people aspect, the using of people, I've come to realize is just as much a part of my addiction as anything else. Not only manipulating myself, but manipulating other people to feel control. I love control. Love it. It's a big issue. So when you start talking about, like, the first step and that powerlessness, I've been going through that recently with my my eldest daughter, like, feeling like a lot of powerlessness and, like, trying to come to some acceptance and knowing that I need to surrender, I need to have acceptance, and not being able to do it, holding on to it with every bit of my being, causing myself so much unnecessary pain because it hurts me to think to let her have her journey, her pain. So, like, take your hand off the wheel. It's a difficult thing. It's a difficult thing. But where was I going with that? I don't want to talk about, like, the using so much. I really don't. But, like, it's like anything else. Looking backwards, I was able to look at some patterns. So I'll talk about a few of my patterns real quick. So throughout my addiction, I said I used people. And my addiction always escalated to a new level with a new man. And, like, it was like each, like, tier that I hit in my addiction, it also was like, let's go on this journey with, like, another dude and wreck your fucking life a little more. So that's what I did. And ultimately in the bitter ends there, all the things that I said I would never do growing up, like, my mom was, I can't say anybody who was an addict, but my mom, like, was definitely one of us, right? She unfortunately passed away as a direct result of her addiction when I was 18 years old. That was not a good scene. And the pattern that I had, like, this last at the bitter ends the last time, was that, like, all the lines I said I would never cross, that my mom even told me not to cross. Like, hey, don't do that drug. Hey, especially don't do that drug that way. Or that I was prissy about, like, in like rehabs. Like, I was that girl that you probably wanted to punch in the face. Of like, I would never do that. I don't actually talk like that. But that's kind of how I was. but I finally did all those things. One thing that I've come to realize that I always try to share is that one of the reasons that I kept myself on the outskirts of the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, because I knew about NA for a long time. I was in and out of, like, adolescent units growing up. I was in a few rehabs, so I knew what NA was, and I had gone to a few NA meetings. But I didn't come early, and I didn't stay late, and I sure as hell didn't pray. Me and God were not on good terms. and I really did it just to appease, like, my family. And it was because I looked at the differences between everybody. Like, throughout my addiction, despite, like, some of the things that happened, I kept a job. I paid my bills. I had a car. I could make my outsides look really pretty. And really, that goes hand in hand with that control and the manipulation that I deal with. If I look pretty on the outside, if I look like I have my shit together, I'm okay. but inside I'm a freaking wreck. That's still true sometimes today. If you had caught me at my home group on Thursday, I was looking exactly how I felt. I was a mess and very tired. I think I was literally laying on the ground in my home group. But that's kind of the life when you have a baby. But it's she's like my whole world. I will say that. But when I finally like got my shit where I was like, okay, let's go to rehab. It was because my grandmother had kind of like put her final foot down, right? She said she was going to give up on me. And out of anybody in my life, my grandmother had never given up on me. My mom pushed me with my grandmother when I was like in my teen years. And that woman showed me all the grace in the world. All of the grace in the world. Loved me like nobody else. And to hear the defeat in her voice was just the most heartbreaking thing in the world. And so I decided to finally go to rehab. And then I went, kind of begrudgingly, but I went to a partial program. And then from the partial program, I went to a halfway house. And that's how I ended up halfway across the state in here in Johnstown. Well, this is Indiana, but you get what I mean. What a world. Coming from like being like an hour out of Philly to an hour out of Pittsburgh, it's a different ball game. Literally, like soda versus pop. not about that life. Anyway, but it was an interesting adventure. Do I recommend living with 24 other women? Sure don't. But the halfway house did force me to go to meetings. And I was clean. I was having a great freaking time, man. However, the minute I get clean, the minute I put down the drugs, everything else comes up. Eating, food becomes an issue. Self-harm, self-hatred, and people. and so I was that girl getting ready for the meetings like an hour and a half beforehand. I was loving the attention I was getting from everybody at the meetings. And I got a sponsor, never called her, not once. I subsequently relapsed because when I went home and saw my family and they were like, how's rehab? I was like, great, fam. I immediately came back to use. And so let's talk about those patterns that like I've learned about. I had actually set myself up to relapse long before I ever went home on Thanksgiving. I was already in cahoots and talking to other women that I knew had already relapsed. I was going over to their houses while they were getting high, but I was resisting. There's actually a question in the first step that talks about that. Would you ever like test your recovery? Looking back, like I read that now and I'm like, who does that? I'm like, girl, that was you, you dumb. What are you doing? But that's exactly what I was doing, right? So the minute I was confronted with all of those feelings, I had no choice but to use. That's the only thing I knew was how to use. And even now, it's still commonplace for me to feel that way. Especially given what's been going on in my life recently. I would love to just say F it. You know, some days. Have no responsibilities. That sounds like a freaking dream some days. I'm not going to relapse. It's not my plan. But like, to say that, to not have responsibilities, to say that I could just escape is an enticing factor. And I've come to understand a deeper meaning of when opportunity meets desire. I don't desire to get high, I desire to escape. It's why I used in the first place. I desire to escape the feelings that I'm feeling. And so kind of looping back to what I had said at the beginning, the things that I've been trying to deal with, like that have to deal with the first step, I'll come back to as soon as I like surrender and accept what's going on in my life, I'm gonna find peace. And at this point, now that I've said it on this level, means if I continue to do it, I am an active participant in my own pain, and gosh darn do I hate that saying. when I acknowledge it, when I bring it to the light, if I continue to live in that cycle of like self-abuse and self-hatred, I want it now. I'm a glutton for punishment. In which case, I am. But anyway, I'll get there one day at a time. But getting clean, coming through, when I did relapse, I actually started working that first step. I tore myself a brand new butthole with my first step. That thing was thick. that's what I had to do for me. Do I recommend that? Probably not. But it is an amazing thing to look back on and read, because I do not feel the same way that I feel about myself today. I truly, truly hated myself when I first got clean. I believed that I deserved every ounce of pain that had ever been given to me. And I do not believe that today. I do not believe that today. I started working the second step, and that pattern came back into play. I met a guy. plus, I had also already previously built up a reputation in the good old town of John for being a hoe. So, we had that going on. But I finally like met this guy, and I had been like, I was like he was my prey, right? The minute he went single on Facebook, I was like, I'm in there like swimwear. He had a puppy, and I was like, let me come play with your puppy. We all know what I meant. But I came over, and I was kind of like a little bit of a succubus, and I didn't leave. Still haven't really. <We're fine. laughs> But I remember being at his house, and I got the call that my first sponsor had relapsed. And I like that was the first time that I had like literally hit my knees, like on his back porch. Like I was like, fuck. Like, and selfishly so though, I thought of me. What am I gonna do? Because when I think of like who I want and as a sponsor, I have that Me Too moment. I see a part of you, like a part of me in you or what you said. Like I connect to it. And to feel that connection, like, in jeopardy, it wasn't a good feeling, and I didn't know how to process it. Thank God, area service happened to be the next day. And it's one of the reasons my dumbass never leaves. Because just in case, I can always make it to area service and I can find a new sponsor, if that should happen. It'll always be there. But thank goodness, right? And I found a sponsor, and I finished up two and went through three and started four with her, but didn't end up, I switched sponsors before going to four, like before doing four with her. But she did teach me a lot about two and three, because like I said, me and God weren't really on the best terms. I had a big resentment against God. I felt like God like said, oh, well, you know, she's so terrible that she should have been abused as a child. She's so terrible that all of her grandparents should be taken from her. She's so terrible that her mother should be taken from her. And she should see it, right? That was like the kind of like the level of resentment I had against God. It's not a good place to be. I have found myself in that same spot clean. And thank God I'm able to like have a higher power that is to my understanding. And that understanding has evolved and has grown. You know, when I first got clean, it was like the rooms, it was people. And it's even more so today, it is people. And yes, I do have like some, I got a crystal in my hand. I'm like rubbing it over here. You know, I love the moon and I love the sun, but like it really is people. It's that me watching the phone ring and like finally picking it up at the last second, even though I really don't freaking want to, and it being like the conversation that I needed to hear. It's someone like coming from behind me and hugging me in a sheets that I didn't know I needed because I was so freaking nervous, right? That to me is like a higher power. Doing for me what I can't do for myself. Someone telling me that like, hey, are you okay, bud? You know? Because sometimes, like, when you're posed with that question, it's like, do I lie? Because I don't lie today. No, I'm not okay. And, like, being okay with admitting that, too. Like, that's a cool thing. That's what recovery has done for me. Going through four was painful for me personally. I thought I have a lot of trauma that I don't necessarily speak about on a group setting. Really no need for it. But I do have a lot of trauma, and I personally decided to seek outside help during that time. It says in our literature that medicine, religion, and psychiatry was not sufficient. That does not mean it is not a good tool to have in the toolbox, and that's what it has been for me. Up and down throughout my recovery. I talked to lots of people. I'm a little bonkers. But I digress. But five, still to this day, is my favorite step. Still, because I got relief. I got mental, physical, spiritual relief from step five. For the first time in the longest time in my life. And for those of you who know my sponsor, that woman was like, you want to know what I did? And then she told me some off the wall crazy shit. It was great. I love her to death. She is a spirit animal. And she eats really healthy. Actually, fun fact, the main reason that I picked the current sponsor that I have is because she thought farts were funny. Yeah, not even joking. Not even joking a little bit. And she jokingly likes to say that my daughter is named after her. In which case, my grandmother's name was also Mary, and so was my husband's great-grandmother, Mary. But she says she knows it's for her. All right. But five truly was my favorite step. Six?
Yeah.
Wasn't a fan. Wasn't a fan. Six was painful. Because as I've been describing to you recently, yes, it has to do with step one, me coming to some acceptance and surrender, but it's also about a character defect of control and me needing to strangle it and trying not to act out on how I'm feeling, which is seven, right? Taking the action, trying not to act out on seven towards my eldest daughter, right? So, and the only way I can combat that is to work one on it, which is what I don't want to do. I want to be like, I protect you from everything, you know? But yeah, six and seven were a little rough on me. And I feel like I said, like just right now where I'm at in my life, that's kind of what I've been feeling like too, like pulled in like both of those directions. And knowing that one will be my freedom, ultimately. checking my time, okay, good. and I can't remember where I heard it, and some of you have maybe heard me say this before, but the way I heard it once, and the way they related the steps was 1, 2, and 3 is your foundation, 4 is the pain, and 5 is the freedom, 6 is the pain, and 7 is the freedom, 8's the pain, 9's the freedom, and then 10, 11, 12 is the roof on your house, man. And 8, I had to rewrite a few times because I kind of like missed the mark, like I did not understand set assignment, and I put like, well, they also hurt me, fam. And my sponsor was like, this is about the exact nature of your wrongs. You can bring her up to me. I don't mind. And 9 has been a beautiful step. That is a continuous work of, it's a continuous work of a journey. One thing that I always like to share about 9 is like, someone in the rooms who is no longer with us, you know, shared like, just put it into categories then. You know, ones that you're willing to make, ones that you're unwilling to make, you know? And whenever I think about my relationship with my dad, I inadvertently also think of that man. Because there's a lot of hurt on both sides in the relationship I had with my father. And this is a guy I grew up calling my dad, not my biological dad. I call him Michael. but there was a lot of hurt on both sides. And he was kind of like tied in with my stepmother, who I also had like my own like resentment against in that capacity. And I didn't know how to work on it. He did not come to my wedding, and that hurt. But I understood, A, I'm 4 hours away. B, just because I got clean doesn't fix everything. You know? But him and I have continuously worked on our relationship little bits at a time. And really it came, like, it was one of the ways that I could see that it truly had to be my changed behavior. My dad's biggest gripe was always that I didn't call. I didn't follow up, I didn't answer. And so what was he left to do? Just worry about me. And just because he knows that I'm clean doesn't mean he doesn't worry. So if I still do that clean, I'm still causing harm. The same harm that he's felt for a very long time. But we've been working on it, little bits at a time. And he finally got to meet my husband and my daughter, and he recently met my youngest daughter. And a lot of healing happened in that. Even my stepmom, she was like, they're perfect for you. And I cried and she cried and it was great. Eventually I will probably make formal amends to my stepmother. But there was like this unspoken, like that all her saying that and us crying was an amends in itself. Words didn't necessarily need to be spoken. We talk about like a hug in Narcotics Anonymous. Well, that hug, that embrace, that cry did just as much like repairing as it does in these rooms, right? And same with my dad, right? And I remember like him and I were having a text conversation of all things, and I was like, man, I just, you know, I was trying to plan to make like formal amends, and he's like, I've forgiven you a long time ago. All I want is you to forgive yourself. Lost it. Completely. Completely. Because I'm my hardest critic, man. And I was the one holding on to it. I was the one making things weird, as I do. And that's what I do. I like to learn the hard way. It's my favorite. Moving on to 10. 10 was kind of difficult for me. Repetition is sometimes difficult for me. And then when I finally hit the repetition, it made me feel kind of like 6 again, because I was like, no, no, no. And that felt like shit. Didn't like that. So what did I have to do? I had to take action and like change that. But 10 was like really difficult for me. I won't deny that. And I actually didn't start to feel good about 10 until I hit 11. Because I worked it in with my 11th step, like trying to build that connection with my higher power. And I realized that like, if I was trying to like listen, I couldn't do that if all the shit from the day was up in my headsies. I had to do a 10 step so that I could actually listen, so that I could actually like be semi-peaceful. Because otherwise I was just thinking about everything I did that day. So might as well do the 10th step while we're there. And that's what I did. 12 was a beautifully painful step for me. During 12, I had one of the toughest sponsorship relationships that I've ever gone through. And the reason I'm mentioning this is because 12 is all about giving back what was so freely given to you. Right? And I dropped a sponsee during that. Hated myself for it. Hated myself. My sponsor was generally good at correcting me and saying, you know, stop taking responsibility for other people's shit. I'm real good at that. That might be my favorite. But I learned a lot. Despite the amount of pain that I went through in that particular relationship, I've learned more about grace and sponsorship than in anything else I've ever done. And I learned more about boundaries. But I want to tell you a little bit like about me now, because I told you like some of the stuff I went through like within like my step work. But like, what has that step work done for my life? Like I said, with step one, I don't hate myself anymore. Really don't. Some days are tough. Some days I don't feel like I'm good enough. Some days I feel like I'm failing as a sponsor, as a wife, as a mother. I would be lying to you if I did not have those days. But I know that that's my disease. I know that on any given day, I'm doing the best I can with what I've got and the amount of sleep I have. During this process, that guy that I told you about that I kind of like, you know, preyed upon, he'll tell you that too. We grew. And at one point, he was going to be potentially getting custody of his daughter, right? And he taught me a lot about patience and taking my hands out of the pot, because I was like, you need to get her right now and you need to fight for her. And he was like, just take your hands off the wheel. I was like, do you understand who I am? And also, there was a lot of stuff that I didn't talk about with my mother, but she was not a good person. She was not a good mother to me. She was a good person to many people, my mother was. She was very loved. She was not a good mother to me. I needed to make that correction. And I could see this little girl like potentially going through something similar that I was going through, so I immediately clung on to like wanting to protect her, just like I had wanted to be protected when I was a kid. Because my family knew how bad my mother was. They never took me from her. Never, not once. And all the damage that caused. I have recently like been able to talk to my family about that. You know, that's a big step. But ultimately we did get that little girl. And you know, here's the thing about kids is she taught me more about forgiving my family than anything else. Because here's this little girl in this house, and she was still in all that pain. It didn't matter that she had been taken away from it. She was still in pain. And she still loved her mother, and that was completely and utterly okay. Right? And that guy, right? So one of the things that like I've learned throughout Narcotics Anonymous is that in order to have like a good relationship with my sponsor, I needed to have honest, open, vulnerable communication. In order to have a good relationship with my higher power, I need to have honest, open, and vulnerable communication. Sometimes that means I yell at God. Just saying. So that also meant that if I want any relationship to be healthy, I need to be open, honest, and vulnerable. I need to talk about that elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about. I need to get uncomfortable, which is not fun. Nobody willingly wants to do that shit. Nobody. And if you do, I am scared of you now. But, and so we grew. I also learned through Narcotics Anonymous that I was a lot smarter than I was giving myself credit for in lots of things, you know, whether that be, you know, all the things that are monetary, right? I've got a job. I've been there for like 6 years. You know, we have a car, we have cars, which is great. You know, the quality of my problems today are much different, right? but like we got to go on our honeymoon and we went to Rome and we got to go to meetings in Italy. Cool freaking experience, dude. They do kiss on the cheek. Just in case if you weren't expecting it, now you can. Because I wasn't. I knew for the hug, didn't think for the kisses. I was like, oh, okay. But like, we say, like, or I've heard these things in Narcotics Anonymous, like, a hug is a hug, right? Like, pain shared is pain lessened, right? I've heard those things in Narcotics Anonymous. It's not that I didn't understand them. It's but when we went to a different country and people were speaking in a language that I didn't understand, and I could still understand that they were in pain, or that a hug transcended language, that was a cool thing. Made me feel safe. And then we went to this one that was bilingual, and I like mentioning this guy because he just is the energy that I would love to embody. But he was just like, if I'm in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, I am home. And I was like, get it, buddy. He was going to a football game. By football, I mean soccer. But he was about that life. And he was just amped for life. But he was right. I've had some beautiful gifts in recovery, and I kind of mentioned it, but I said that I've been in a place where me and God weren't on good terms, right? And I share this because I had the honor of like another woman sharing with me. While my husband and I were attempting to have a child, I had several miscarriages, some concurrent, like January, February, you know, back to back. That's the most painful thing I've ever been through in my whole entire life. And I would get so angry. And I was angry at everything. I was angry at God. I was angry at everyone. People were like, oh, you know, God, you know, God's plan. Oh, you're not helping the God situation, friend. You know, everything happens for a reason. Oh, yeah, tell me. Right? I became hateful, venomous, and me and God were not on good terms. Actually, me and God just weren't talking, and that's the problem. And that's where I kind of am. Sometimes I yell at God. I know now that open, honest, vulnerable communication with my higher power, sometimes me being like, what the fuck? Bro, are we doing here? Why? Or crying, yelling, screaming. I find myself up Schitt's Creek with God when I stop talking. So if I'm talking and that talking means yelling, if that talking means I'm mad, at least I'm talking. And I, honestly, in any relationship, if I stop talking, I'll find myself up Schitt's Creek. Except maybe with this one. She kind of likes it when I'm quiet. But even after she was born, this beautiful little miracle, it still took time. And there was this woman in the rooms, and I noticed she had this like tattoo of like little baby feet on her hands, or I can't remember if it's on her hands, but it's like on her upper body. And she said, if you don't fix your relationship with God, like, you're going to make the same mistake I did. And she had relapsed. And we cried and we hugged. And I heeded her advice. And she is such a beautiful human being, that woman. I thank her, because I really wasn't in a good place. And if I hadn't gone to that like particular like woman's like event, if I hadn't heard her words, like I don't know where I would be. You know? She did so much for me. I don't think she even knows that, but she did. I have so many beautiful things today in recovery. And yeah, I have like the family and the house and the husband. He's all right, but I have me today. And like, I'm actually like kind of okay with being me. For the most part. I'm a little weird. I fart a lot. Thank God you all have been back here. That's why I keep backing up. You can't hear it on the recording. But Liz, you let me know. But my favorite thing about recovery today is the people in my life. Whether that be like the friends and the relationships that I've built, my sponsor, sponsees, because man, do they save my ass way more than I save theirs. You know? I think that's all I got. I love Narcotics Anonymous. All done.